There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello, you're through to Books Boys. Who's on the line?
This is Ken Everin, author of my debut novel, A Body of Fates.
Awesome, Ken. I was just chatting with my co-host about the book, and I mean, I absolutely love it. I just finished it there today. It's interesting. Sometimes I'll look at a book and I never know how much time to allot. And I thought, oh, the page count is not super long. I could maybe squeeze it into 2 days. But I actually was really enjoying it. And I decided to savor it a little more and take 3 or 4 days to read it because there's a lot going on. And I didn't want to kind of skim over it and then it's over. I really wanted to kind of take it in. It's an interesting story.
Nice. Thank you.
So I suppose the main thing that I'm curious about is what amount of this is autobiographical or how much of it is, you know, just a pure work of fiction.
The story was inspired by a real life tragedy, as I say in the foreword, the death of my then wife, my boy's mom, when she was very young. Everything else is fiction and or fictionalized. So that event, when your life gets derailed like that, it created a whole sort of what if and if only questions. And I thought that a very interesting way to explore all those very, you know, human thoughts and emotions would be this idea of connecting it to the ancestral past, to the historical past, and all these, you know, the questions like, if I stepped off the curb and the bus went by and I didn't die, what's the difference between that and stepping off the bus and leaving this planet for good, or stepping off the curb and leaving this planet for good? So yeah, that was the inspiration of the story. And you probably saw in the afterword, I did note some of the characters that were sort of connected to real life characters in my life. But, you know, the story itself is fictionalized and the characters are fictionalized.
And some of the characters are quite interesting. The one that got me was actually the two one-legged norms, because I thought, well, for sure, this is a pure work of fiction, but not quite.
There is a little nugget of reality behind that. My wife has a relative. Actually, she has two relatives that are one-legged, and they're both named Norm, but they're not. One is a long past grandfather, so they weren't contemporaries, and they weren't sort of related. And I don't think they ever stood side by side. But I thought it would be a kind of fun and interesting thing. And I did, you know. Like the little note in the book says, I thought that would be a really cool band name. So if there's any musicians listening out there, like, go right ahead.
Have you copyrighted that phrase, or are they allowed to use it?
I have not. It's out there for the world.
Cool. It's interesting that you're just touching on music, because throughout the book, we do actually get some little snippets of song lyrics and things. Yes. And I believe that you hope to actually have a soundtrack put together.
Yes, I do. I have some amazingly talented kids, young men, 18, 19, 21, and some very good friends who are musicians, as well as a wickedly talented wife who has been singing all her life. Has a claim to fame of once being on stage at CBGB's in New York. So we have this thing in our family that we do. We get together and play a lot of music, and the poems and the lyrics of the book are from things that I've written in the past. And so what I'm hoping to do is draft into service my sons and their young friends, and have all these teenagers and 20 somethings actually record a soundtrack. We have some very talented sort of recording engineer friends, and we have access to studios if we need it. And so it's a bit of a project, and I think it's going to take a while, but I hope that, you know, maybe a year from now, I'll be able to re-release the book with this audio companion. Mm-hmm. Like, that would be so awesome. And also give these young people kind of a leg up in their musical careers, like just put some stuff out in the world and see what happens. It's, you know, I don't think there's going to be much, if any, singing from all us old gray-haired people. So it's going to hopefully, you know, launch some careers. That would be my fondest desire.
It's a fantastic idea, especially with it being collaborative, you know, with your sons and everything as well. But even just the idea of having the soundtrack for the novel is fantastic. And it's not just music, but you actually close the novel with a series of poems as well.
Well, I wanted to, at the end of the book, actually give sort of a complete sort of compendium of all the song lyrics and poems that mm-hmm. were used either as snippets in the book, or there were a couple of them that were used in their entirety as part mm-hmm. of some of the dream sequences. So, but I thought it would be interesting for people to sort of, okay, here's all the poems, here's all the lyrics. And like I said, hopefully a year from now, you'll be listening to all the music that goes along with those poems and lyrics.
Fantastic. No, I mean, I love the idea. I actually had a similar idea to do that. The only thing that was lacking for me was being able to write a novel. But I always thought it would be a good idea to have a novel with a soundtrack. You know, I made some music and I did some paintings, and I thought, wouldn't it be good to do a novel that encompasses all of this? And you kind of have the paintings as illustrations for each chapter and then a song to go with it. And I thought, brilliant. Well, I've got the paintings and I've got the songs. Now, if only I knew how to write a book.
Well, Dean, if you don't, then go find a friend who can write a book, do your own collaboration. Like, it's a great idea. And obviously, it's not necessarily new. It's stolen from movies and television. Mm. And, you know, there's all kinds of examples of people having done this. So, you know, our what we call, you know, the Wove the Poet Collaborative, which I think is a kind of a cool name. Yeah, we're all pretty stoked at being able to give this a try. And you know, if it falls on its face, well, we're okay with that. At least we tried. And if it turns into something, so much the better.
There's no harm done. The only thing I would ask is, if you're going to be working on that for the next year, I suppose we're not expecting your second book anytime soon.
Well, I'm working on it. I do I've got sort of the rough outline done, and some of the elements of plot and character and things sort of planned. This one would be pure sci-fi. So I'm going to go, you know, into that realm. My background, you all the stuff that I read since I was a kid, everything from, you know, Ray Bradbury and Robert Heinlein to Stephen King, and then on through people like Salman Rushdie and Margaret Atwood and John Irving. So I really love this sort of, and especially people like Gabriel Garcia Marquez or Murakami. So that sort of interface between sci-fi and speculative and literary fiction. And so those are the elements that inspire me and kind of, you know, make me ponder stuff on a starry night kind of thing. So that's what I'm hoping to write. So the second one, I'm going to make an attempt at that and hope for the best. But yes, it will be a little bit harder to do while we're, you know, working on this music. But as I said, most of it's going to fall on these very talented young people. So I'm hoping to sit back and be more like the conductor.
Supervise, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the way to do it. No, I mean, fantastic. So this book obviously bases some stuff on your real life. And as we said, then obviously fictionalizing the story. Is that your, I have this that I need to say book done, and the next book's going to be just purely fictional, or will you bring in some real elements as well?
I think any real elements that come into any subsequent books will be less so. This mm-hmm. was my, you know, sort of catharsis and purge to write this story. One of the things that happens when you go through something like that is you meet a lot of other people who are living personal tragedies or who are having, you know, medical issues and or dealing with death or loss. And so the thing that actually finally prompted me to get off my ass and actually write the thing was 2 years later, my lifelong best friend died of lung cancer.
No.
And he had always said to me, like, just write, just shut up and write, just write. If you think you can do it, write. And that was 2019. So COVID hit, and it's like, oh, I got nothing better to do, so let's take a poke at this. But having said that, yeah, this is kind of it for this particular story and these particular characters. I won't continue on with any of them.
Yeah, I didn't think there'd be a sequel. I feel like this is a complete story, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you said, it's not something that I'm going to have to touch on again in the future. I'm actually really looking forward to taking a poke at sci-fi. It's one of my first loves. I think it'll be fun, and boy, I hope it's
I imagine with sci-fi, you're going to be able to have a lot of fun. You know, you're going to be able to be very explore, because you can put anything in there, really. I mean, I guess some people like to keep it somewhat realistic, and some people like to go completely wild with it.
Yeah, I think I'm on the, and this is metaphor. So clearly, this is metaphor. I think I'm in the let's eat a bag of mushrooms and write a sci-fi camp. So that would be my my metaphorical answer for, hey, I'm just going to let it fly and see where it goes.
Yeah, that ties us in nicely, because in this novel, we do have a nice scene where basically our main characters take a bunch of drugs and have this crazy naked hippie experience against the Salvation Army. That was the one bit I remember more than anything else. Like, what's going on there?
Well, I have a question for you. Did it make you laugh?
It did. Yeah, so. It did.
Okay. Well, so purely fiction, totally fiction.
It was, but okay.
But inspired by actually a real life event, an experience that I had with that best friend that I just mentioned who passed away of lung cancer in 2019. He and I were a little bit experimental in our youth, and we did once find a Salvation Army band playing at 6 o'clock on an Easter Sunday morning, and he did get out and run around them and yell, "I'm a sinner! I'm a sinner!"
Okay,
didn't get
naked and have a bunch of hippies.
No, it was very mild and probably somewhat disrespectful if I look back at it from my point of view now. But yeah, I thought, you know, let's turn that into humor and
sure.
In the end, let's let the Salvation Army band have a victory. So I laughed while I was writing that.
Yeah,
so
it's a funny scene.
I was really hoping it would make people laugh, because I, you know, in writing anything that is sort of real life and has elements of tragedy, I mean, real life is funny too. Real life is sexy. Real life has these other elements. So I was very much hoping, as I sort of swept across these four generations of character, to represent kind of all aspects of the life that we all experience.
Yeah, I mean, there are funny bits, and there are definitely sexy bits in this one as well. And I don't know why I wasn't expecting those, and then they kind of caught me off guard. Because you're expecting that kind of serious story, I suppose, based on the subject matter, based on what's happening, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh no, there's some funny bits and there's some sexy bits. And yeah, you're right, it actually brings real life into it, and it makes it more believable, and it makes it more real to real life, you know.
Well, thank you for that. That was the intention.
It must have been a tough one to write about, but it, you know, basically let's kind of reset a little bit. So the story we have is that we've got a couple, the wife, Deb, you know, she has MS, and we get diary extracts at one point as well, but we just get to see how they get together. It's a lovely, you know, story, the way they meet and everything. They seem to be a fantastic match. And then, of course, they have kids, and then they encounter this medical difficulty, and it does get sad as you read it and you see the problems for the relationship that stem from that. I imagine that it's equally, maybe not equally, but it's difficult for both members of the, you know, of the relationship, even though only one of them has physically got the health problem. And I think that you put that across very well, and we see the struggles of both people.
That again was the attempt. It's to show how, you know, when a relationship breaks, it's usually both people that get broken.
Yeah. And it is very sad, because of course one person's going through a lot, and it's almost like she doesn't know how to cope with it, and one of her things seems to be taking it out on the people she loves, which then makes it hard for them as well. And she's kind of saying, well, I have to put up with this, so I'm going to make your life difficult, because that's all she could kind of think to do. And it's a shame, but
interesting. And this is some facts out of medical science that sadly I had to learn about. Neurological disorders like MS and Parkinson's and Lou Gehrig's and some of these are often lumped in a group by doctors under a term they call the mean diseases.
Right.
And what happens is, you know, all of our humanity actually is in this very thin layer of our prefrontal cortex in the brain. And often that's the stuff that gets attacked first. So very, very understandably, people that are going through that, they just get pissed off. They're just so angry. And a lot of times they either don't know why they're feeling that way constantly, or it's just a very natural human response that eventually they just sort of lose control of.
Yeah.
Something I did not know or did not understand till we went through this, and then, you know, began to understand it. So I thought, you know, that sort of loss of humanity is often not something that people really understand. And again, to write a good tragedy, like, you know, in that sense, it's the harsh truth is actually part of what makes it, I think, a really good story, which again goes back to, like, let's have some humor, let's have some sexy bits, let's have some, you know, because I think if it was all just dark and tragic, I wouldn't want to read a book that's just dark and tragic from the very beginning to the very end.
Yeah. I mean, the characters, I mean, especially David and everything with the alcoholism running the family and everything, they do have dark, tragic pasts.
Yes.
And it kind of sets it up with, oh, well, now they've got together, everything's happy. But then, of course, no, a new darkness and tragedy enters.
Yes.
And, you know, predictably or not predictably, I don't know, but eventually Dave then has an affair without going into any more detail. I don't want to really spoil too much, but that's kind of where he turns to. And that's a typical male response to some extent, which is a shame as well, you know, but
yes, we're sad creatures at times, aren't we?
Yeah, I know. And that's where he goes. And which is, of course, very sad. His wife is very, very sick, and that's what he's doing. But it's written in such a way that you also empathize with both of them. And I think that helps to humanize them both. And I didn't necessarily judge him too harshly, but.
Well, yeah. Thank you. Yeah, that was the intent. You know, that while Deb was being lost and broken, you know, Dave is being lost and broken, but in his own way, because he's physically fine, but he's, you know, mentally and emotionally just destroyed. So of course he makes some bad decisions, you know, and then there's some really delicious sort of regret and redemption, and we won't spoil it, but you know, that sort of in the wrap up towards the end of the book, that's where I wanted to go with the rest of that story.
Yeah, and it's fair to say that he's really struggling mentally as well, but again, I don't want to go into too much detail because we'd like people to read it. But no, it's fantastic. Let's finish by touching on a couple of other characters, because I wanted to ask,
sure,
what caused you to use the nicknames for Deb's family, for the women, the strong kind of female characters, Catherine the Great and so on?
There are friends and people in my life in previous generations who just seem to be nothing but nicknames.
Right.
And I don't know whether that's a generational thing or maybe it's a sports thing, but in you know, my parents' generation, and then the ones before that, and the ones before that. I don't know. Everybody seemed to have a nickname.
Okay.
And that could be just familial idiosyncrasy. Who knows? But I thought that that would be an interesting way of, again, sort of humanizing these people. Mm. Like, you know, if somebody gives you a nickname, usually you're loved and you're surrounded by people who love you and you have a family. Or maybe it's the opposite. Maybe you're just a total asshole and you got a nickname because of that. But it again is one of those things, I think, that humanizes the characters.
Yeah, I think I would agree. So before I ask our final question, I'm going to first of all say, would you like to tell people where they can go to buy the book or plug your website, something like that?
Thank you very much. Yeah. On my website, there's a book link or to Amazon, to Barnes and Noble, to Kobo, Apple Books, and it's available in all three formats. So hardback, softback, and ebook. And there will be an audiobook that I'm going to do, probably simultaneously with the soundtrack at some mm-hmm. point in time in the future. So that's coming as well.
Fantastic. And what is your website? Sorry.
It is kenevren.com.
Cool. There we go. And I'll put that in the show notes as well.
Fantastic.
So thank you so much for your time and for calling in. And I'll leave you with our last question that we ask all of our authors. If there's yeah. any existing book that you wish you had been the person to write, what would it be?
Oh, that's a good one. I think probably it would be The Moor's Last Sigh by Salman Rushdie. It's not one of his most popular books. And I don't know, maybe competing with that would be The Blind Assassin by Margaret Atwood, also Ooh. Not one of her most popular books, but both of them are just, they're the kind of books that when I started, I sort of dropped into them like an alternate universe and didn't come back until I finished. It was, you know, and I every little moment of reading I was looking forward to. So probably a double-barreled answer would be one of those two. And man, I would crow about it from the rooftops because those books are so good.
I have read both authors, but I haven't read either of those books. So those will be added to my long list of books to get through.
Dean, I imagine your list is very long.
It is. I keep thinking, you know, I buy a quantity of books and I think, right, I'm going to read these. I would love to reset to zero and then go get, but it never happens because I pick some up, yeah. people gift me some, people send me some, or I'm in the bookstore and I just buy just five or six today. You know, there's always about 40 or 50 in the queue and it never seems to, it gets down to about 30 and then another 10 or 20 get added on. So, yeah.
Well, I heartily endorse your pastime. Go for it. Read them all.
Thank you. I will work my way through as many books as I can in this lifetime. But Ken, thank you so much for calling in. It's been a pleasure. And we'll, as I say, we'll put the website and everything in the show notes. And hopefully people will go check out the book.
Thank you so much, Dean. It has been a pleasure for me as well.
Awesome. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.